He's back. Whether we like it or not, old John the Baptist, the wild man of the wilderness, he's back. Not that he was invited. You don't want John the Baptist to come to your Christmas party. He should never be invited. But he doesn't need an invitation. He simply shows up every Christmas on the second Sunday of Advent, whether we like it or not. He is like a bull in a china shop. He comes crashing into our Christmas celebration, upsetting the status quo, defying all of our traditions, jolting us out of our complacency, and embarrassing us with his crudeness. And so last Sunday, we were talking about the end of the world. And this Sunday, it's grisly, smelly, uncivilized, uncouth John the Baptist. And you're saying, hey, wait a minute, it's Christmas. Where are the angels and the shepherds and the wise men and the little baby in the swaddling clothes? Well, they are coming. Trust me. They will be here, just come next Sunday. But we have to get ready. And that's what the message of John the Baptist is all about. Robert read for us those opening verses of Mark's gospel. You notice that Mark has no angelic visitations or pronouncements. There are no wise men following a star, no shepherds abiding in the fields, no thundering theological proclamations, but it's simply, on your mark, go. We don't even have time to get set before here is the wild man in the wilderness, John the Baptist, proclaiming, prepare the way of the Lord. I want you to go back with me 32 years. It is the second Sunday of Advent, 1982. I'm the new preacher at the Roxborough Baptist Church, and I'm preaching a sermon titled Preparing the Way of the Future. And it's all about John the Baptist. And I'm talking about the fact that John the Baptist is not orthodox, that this fella was clothed in camel's hair, that he ate locusts and wild honey, that he didn't preach in the nice synagogues, but rather in the wilderness. And I was going on and on talking about John the Baptist. And about this time, there's a fella sitting up in the balcony. He's a big, burly, rather unorthodox fella who doesn't know about propriety or decorum, and suddenly he stands up and he shouts, prepare the way of the Lord. Well, good old Elmer was also seated in the balcony. I've changed his name. But Elmer just about had a heart attack. That fella screaming in the balcony 32 years ago upset Elmer so much, it took him 30 years to get over it. Literally 30 years. The next day, Elmer came to my office. He was so upset. His voice was trembling. And he said, when that fella stood up and when he started screaming, I thought he had gone mad. He said, I literally looked to see if his mouth was foaming. He said, I started to tackle him. He said, I knew that we had to take him out, that we had to subdue him, that we had to get him out of the worship service because he had interrupted our worship. And then I confessed to Elmer that it was not spontaneous, that the fella had not lost his mind, but it was all scripted, that it was all planned, and I was the one responsible. Elmer became even angrier. He told me that he could not believe that I would engage in such theatrics. This is not what the church is supposed to be, he said, as he stormed out of my office. And he stayed mad at me the 8 years I was there. He was still mad at me when I left. He wasn't mad that I left, but he was still mad at me 2 years ago. True story. 2 years ago, I ran into Elmer. I didn't even recognize him, but he recognized me, and he came up to me and he shook my hand and he said, I owe you an apology. And he apologized for his attitude and his actions, but it took him 30 years to get over it. That's what old John the Baptist will do to you. You see, what happened to Elmer that day in the balcony is exactly the impact that John the Baptist should have on all of us. If John the Baptist doesn't shake us up this morning, if he does not challenge the status quo of First Baptist Church, if he does not jolt us out of our complacency, then we have not heard the message of John the Baptist. He is telling us, in order to prepare for Jesus to come, in order to welcome the angels and the shepherds and the wise men and the little baby in Bethlehem's manger, we have to change. We must prepare the way of the Lord. He is calling us to accountability and responsibility. His baptizing in the River Jordan was a holy collision that was taking place between the Spirit, the water, and the Word, calling us to a life-giving mission, calling us to reconciliation and forgiveness, calling us to radical discipleship. And what John the Baptist is saying is simply this: we cannot continue to operate the way things are. The status quo must change. It cannot be business as usual. We need to be shaken out of our complacency. 73 years ago today, December the 7th, 1941, our nation was shaken out of our complacency in a violent way when the Japanese forces launched a surprise attack on the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor, leaving over 2,500 sailors and soldiers dead, 20 naval vessels, including 8 battleships, destroyed, 300 airplanes destroyed. Every American who was alive remembers where they were when they heard about Pearl Harbor. The next day, in his epic date that will live in infamy address, President Franklin Roosevelt asked Congress to declare a state of war against the Empire of Japan, a request that was granted with only one dissenting vote. And on the 8th of December, 73 years ago, the United States entered the Second World War. But this was a war that had been building for a decade. In 1937, Japan had declared war on China. In 1939, Hitler invaded Poland and started the European War. But the United States said, we don't want to get involved. This war does not concern us. This is not our problem. What happens overseas is of no concern to us. But 73 years ago today, it became a huge concern. The message of John the Baptist should shake us out of our complacency in the same way that Pearl Harbor shook this nation and my buddy in the balcony shook up old Elmer. There is a war going on. There is a war against the forces of darkness in a broken society. And we must be involved. We must be engaged. Because we have the message of light in a world of darkness. We have a message of hope in a world of despair. We have food in a world where there is hunger. But we must get involved. Prepare the way of the Lord. That was the message in Isaiah, the message that is repeated in the first chapter of Mark. But you know what they were talking about? I mean, Robert, the first lesson was from the 40th chapter of Isaiah. They're talking to the people of God who have been in Babylonian captivity. And the message was, you need to come home. You need to come home just as quickly. You need to come home as fast as you can. And it is our responsibility to expedite your coming, to make it easy, to help you along the way. And so when there's a valley, we're going to lift it up. When there's a mountain, we're going to bring it low so that we can build a super highway through the wilderness and we can get you home as soon as possible. That was the primary focus, the only focus. The ministry of John the Baptist was focused on one thing, and that was to direct people home to Jesus. John the Baptist wasn't about himself. It wasn't his message. It was the message of Christ. His primary mission, his only mission, the only thing that mattered was to point the way to Jesus. And do you know that that's the only thing that should matter to us? That should be the primary focus of our church. That should be our unique mission, to direct people to Jesus. But when people who are on the outside, when people who are victims of this hopelessness and this darkness and this despair, and people who are hungry, and people who are helpless, and people who don't have heat at night, and people who have no place to call home, what do they see when they see the church? Do they see Jesus? Or do they see an institution that is irrelevant, with irrelevant traditions, often in conflict? Do they see a church that is more intent on judging people rather than loving people? More concerned about condemning others rather than helping them? More focused on excluding people rather than embracing them? The way that we prepare for the Lord, the way of the Lord, is to open the door to Jesus, not to close it. You know, there's so many important issues that are facing our society and dividing our society, our nation, and our world. There's so many big issues, issues that are controversial, issues that within this sanctuary and those of you listening on the radio If we talked about one of these issues, we would find a diversity of opinion. We would find people who feel strongly on either side of these issues. Issues such as immigration, such as civil rights, as focused in the uprisings in Ferguson and New York and around the country. Homosexuality, First Amendment issues, and we could go on and on. If we allow these issues to become the primary focus of this church or any church, it will only result in division and conflict. What we are called to do is to embrace diversity, to let God be the judge on a lot of these issues, and to open the door with love and kindness and grace and forgiveness and acceptance, even when we may not agree. I can't find anywhere in Scripture where Jesus wants us to be known by our positions on different issues. I can't find any place where doctrinal stands are the criteria of the church, or theological interpretation. But what I do find is Jesus saying to his disciples, they will know you by your love. And he leaves a new commandment. And he said, as the Father has loved me, as I have loved you, so love one another. They will know that we are Christians by our love. That is the only thing that should be the focus of our church. It is here that people can find the love of Christ. It is here that people can find a home. It is here that people can find acceptance. It is here that people can find grace. And we better listen to old John the Baptist, because he's shaking us up. He's reminding us that purity of heart is to will one thing, and that one thing is Jesus. The second thing is, John the Baptist is calling us to get involved, to do something, to act. My daughter Della has a little problem this Christmas. You see, 4-year-old Parker has announced that he is not going to tell his parents what he wants for Christmas, that he will tell Santa Claus. And his parents can be just as surprised on Christmas morning as everyone else. Well, what are we going to do about that? Somebody needs to do something. And so G-Mommy is. She's told Parker that he can tell Santa Claus and G-Mommy, and I think we're going to resolve the issue. But the point is, we can't pray for peace and expect peace to happen without getting involved. We can't pray for mercy and expect mercy to happen. We can't pray for people that are hungry and expect them to have food unless we do something. And that's what John the Baptist is saying. Phyllis Stump is one of our church's most faithful members. For those of you who don't know Phyllis, she is a retired educator, and she's also a prolific and gifted author. 3 years ago, Phyllis wrote a wonderful book, Catch a Falling Star. And the book is about students that she has known in her educational career. Students that have come from every different type of background. But you know, this book is not just about the students. This book is about grace. And this book is about getting involved and making a difference. Phyllis writes, many students don't need additional facts drilled into their brains, but instead they need more smiles pats on the back, hugs, love, and simply more grace. One of the most compelling stories in her book is the story of Kristen, a young lady that she met when she was teaching in Thomasville. Kristen was a resident at Mills Home in Thomasville at the Baptist Children's Homes. And Kristen was one of her students in her sophomore English class. And Phyllis writes that when she first met Kristen, she was an underachiever. She was somebody who was always quiet, somber, seldom smiling or showing any emotion. She was barely passing. But Phyllis knew, she had that instinct, and she knew that there was something beneath the surface. There was a reason, something was holding her back. And so she challenged her, and one of the things that Kristen wanted to do was play basketball. And so she went out for the girls' basketball team, and she made the cut. Then she started improving. Her grades started to go from D to a high B. And by the end of the semester, she was an A student, and she was the leading scorer on the girls' basketball team. One Friday at lunchtime, Phyllis was walking through the campus, and she found Kristen and a friend of hers standing out on the sidewalk, and Kristen was crying. And Phyllis asked, "What was wrong? What was wrong?" And finally, Kristen said, "I don't want to go home. And they're making me go home." Phyllis found out that Kristen was in the custody of Department of Social Services in a different county. And she had been placed at the Baptist Children's Homes. It was her weekend to go and visit her father. But she didn't want to go and visit her father because she said, "My dad has physically abused me. He broke my arm before I came here last year. And the summer before that, he hit me and he broke my nose." She didn't want to go home. Now, Phyllis could have sympathized with her and said, "Well, maybe it won't be so bad." But that's not what she did. She got on the telephone. She called the Department of Social Services. She got the social worker. At first, they were very reluctant. They said, "There's nothing we can do about this. This is the legal agreement." And Phyllis said, "But I know that if there is the potential for abuse, then a child cannot be taken back to their home." She had another teacher to get involved. They collaborated this story with the Department of Social Services. They got in touch with the social worker in the different county. But they still didn't know if it would stop the visit. On Monday morning, the girl came and said, "Miss Stump, I just want to thank you. When I got back to my cottage at Mills Home, there was a sheriff's deputy there who had papers to take me to my father. I didn't want to go. And finally, somebody came and said, 'You need to call the social worker.' To make a long story short, the deputy made a few phone calls. They found out that the father threatened the social worker and the caseworker, and Kristen did not have to go back home. And then she confessed to Phyllis that she was so fearful that she was afraid that she might lose her life if she had gone home." This is just one story, a story of grace, a story of somebody who stepped up to the plate, who made a difference. And do you know, every single person in this sanctuary, we can make a difference. We can get involved in different ways, whether it's buying Christmas presents for these little children through the Salvation Army, whether it's being involved in delivering food with the food drive, whether it's supporting crisis ministry and pastor's pantry that feed hungry people, whether it's being involved in different agencies in our community that reach out to people who are sick and have cancer, people who don't have enough food to eat, we can make a difference. And that's what John the Baptist is calling us to do. not to judge people, not to condemn people, but to love people and to show them the way to Jesus. He's back, whether we like it or not. But we need to hear His message, and we need to respond. We need to be the presence of Christ by our attitude and our actions. Would you join me this Advent? Would you become the army of light and hope and help in this community? We can do it. We can make it happen. By God's grace, we can.